I want to thank you for the flowers.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Y'all, it's Abraham Lincoln's birthday today. And when I was a little girl in school, I remember my mother told me I'd come home and I'd say, well, they mentioned it was Abraham Lincoln's birthday, but it didn't say it was my birthday. So it's kind of special to be recognized. Thank you.
Now, this is a good start for a warm-up.
I don't think they can see this.
Oops. Well, yeah. You need to get it up here. Can we talk later, after they invent coffee? So, that's you know, we talked about the basics and getting warmed up and all. Why is it important to go back over some of the same things over and over and over? You know, the Bible just does that all the time. In case you didn't understand it in Genesis, let me tell you in Revelation. And then if you didn't get that, let me get it to you in Leviticus. And then in James, you know, and things like this, over and over on the same thing. Well, you know, an illustration that I had on that is that several years ago, you know, the Dolphins had won three Super Bowls in a row. They went back to practice that summer, and Coach Shula had these guys like Hilgenberg and all these great all-pro linemen down there, and he was teaching them the three-point stance. You know, they teach that in junior high, right? But he had them out there going over this stuff, and the guys were grumbling and complaining and everything. And they said, Coach, we learned this years ago. We don't need to do this. Let's get on with things. He said, the difference between winning a Super Bowl and winning another Super Bowl is having the basics down. So that's what we're talking about in marriage, is going over the basics. Now, most everything we've told you so far, you've heard before. And so it's not to be a guilt trip, but it's to be fun to remind you of the good things. And over again, Peter and Paul said it was not irksome to them to say the same things to you or write the same things to you, but it was safe for you to hear these things. And so we hope that it's safe for you to be reminded. Every time we say something to you, you see this little illustration here. There's three coming back here. We have some of the most exciting conversations after we do a marriage seminar. So you can pray for us. So,
we just want to tell a little bit about ourselves. Jack and I are from Texas, if y'all didn't know that. And Jack's from West Texas up in the Panhandle, and I'm from Houston. And we met in Fort Worth, which is sort of halfway between Houston and Dalhart. Jack had a date with one of my sorority sisters. Jack graduated from Texas A&M. And so we met there, and we were going to tell what attracted each other. What attracted me to you?
You know, here's a tough situation. Some of you know that being an Aggie and everything, at that time there were no girls at A&M. And so here were two Aggie seniors at a sorority rush party at TCU. That was kind of like having the fox in the hen house. and of course, you know, I was just looking around. I said, man, all these beautiful girls in so little time. And how many names it would be? It would be a little too much to write them down, you know, like this. So how many names can I memorize real quick and get it down? Well, I helped Cynthia with carrying some palm trees. She had some. So we got a chance to spend a few minutes together, and I made up my mind that I wanted to meet this girl again another time. And so that's basically our first meeting.
And what attracted me to you?
Well, you were cute, and we had a lot of fun together. We laughed a good bit. Yeah. We were able to just exchange some jokes. It was a little tight to consider keeping her name and in mind and all, because I had a blind date with her sorority sister that same weekend, so I had to watch myself.
I told Jack what attracted me to him. What one, he was fun, and his beautiful blue eyes and his blonde hair.
God has a sense of humor, doesn't he? I have no hair, and I've got glasses on my eyes. So. We have four children. And it's been fun to grow up with them. And I think that's literally the way most mm-hmm. parents are. We grow up with our kids, don't we? And they're all from 31 to 23. scattered from Alaska to D.C. to Atlanta and to Texas, and so we've got them everywhere. And the last one thinks he wants to get married this year. Don't know why he's interested in girls, but anyway.
We told our kids to live in fun places to visit, so they took us to heart.
And we've been married 34 years come April, and just by way of testimony on this, if God hadn't changed my life radically, we wouldn't be here. Let's see. We want to remind you of some things from last night. Hopefully you began to say, how can I do these three things? I will be diligent to have a time with the Lord daily. And I'll pray with my mate each night before retiring. Did some of you have some good time doing that last night? Anybody do that for the first time and have a good time? Maybe a first timer. I know some of you have been praying together, and that short time of prayer that we talked about last night isn't even a starter for where you are. But that was a good reminder for us to just pray that last few minutes, because when my head gets close to the pillow, I'm gone. So it has to be fairly short, but that's a great way for us to do it. And then I'll commit myself to have a date with my mate. And we're going to be talking about some fun things help us have a date each week. And the fun about how to decide how to have a date each week.
Debate.
A debate. Yeah, a debate. That might be it. You know, there are slips like that occasionally. And, you know, we were talking about the basics and getting things down, and our great role model here had to learn some of the, get back into the rule book and find out what things were. And so Hagar here is, and Helgar are getting a little counseling, and the old padre says, there are seven deadly sins: pride, covetous, lust, anger, gluttony, envy, and sloth. Are you sure? I could have sworn one was nagging.
But be sure you look at Helga's
look.
Yeah,
look at Helga's look. I mean, that boy's in trouble. So we have to get back to the rule books and things occasionally.
Did y'all have a good time with your devotionals this morning? Did you get to do that? We wanted to kind of set the groundwork for our time this morning for our husbands to... I love, and we're going to talk, maybe when I'm with the husbands, we can talk about this, that you have to understand your wife. You have to consider her, to learn to live with her in a considerate way, because there are some consequences if you don't. So it's very important to do that. And I love the verse in Proverbs 31, where a wife is to do her husband good and not harm all the days of her life. And as I thought about that, and, you know, I mentioned last night this friend of ours who kept telling her husband that no matter what he did, it wasn't good enough. And in her own way, she was trying to do him good, but it wasn't good. It was harm to him. So it's very important for a wife to discern what is really good, and to do it all the days of her life. And when I read that verse, I thought, I wonder why it doesn't say all the days of his life. But I think for a wife, it doesn't matter. It's all the days of her life. As long as she lives, whether her husband dies or not, she will do him good. She will honor his name. And she is committed to him for life. So that's just a good groundwork of what we want to share this morning.
You know, in 1 Peter 3:7, I've learned a couple of things out of that verse that were very important to me. In my view of Cynthia, and it says, as with to live with considerately with your wife as with a weaker vessel. And I thought, yeah, these women, you know, they just need to, I need to protect this woman, and she's to do these things and all like this. And what I found out that was not so much a weaker vessel, but a special vessel. And it's just like I don't take the crystal out in the backyard to drink coffee out of, you know. I have a mug for that. Cynthia is not somebody that I use for common use. She's a special vessel given to me by the Lord. And then I think the key thing out of this was that I decided that what I wanted out of our marriage, after hearing a friend share his lack of involving his wife in their relationship, was that I wanted us to be heirs together of the grace of life. And I shared that with Cynthia. And so she has a way of reminding me of that. So I said I like to use a money clip. So ever so often she gives me a money clip with 1 Peter 3:7 on there to remind me that I need to treat her as an heir. And so that's good. But it's been fun to think, how many ways do I treat her as an heir together of the grace of life? We wanted to look at this morning at how we can choose to minister to and with my mate. And Philippians 2 has some very good things to say about... let's get that straight. Is that clear from back there? It's hard for me to tell with my bifocals up here and stuff. Whether you can see it.
Clear as
it's. Good. Philippians 2, 2 through 5 is, make my joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit and intent on one purpose. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each of you regard one another as more important than himself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus. And then it goes on about the attitude that Christ had for our time there.
Let's just talk a little bit. What admonitions or exhortations do you see in these verses that would enable you or encourage you to minister to your mate? What advice here does Paul give the Philippians? But let's think of it in terms of marriage, in terms of ministry, serving one another. Are y'all awake? Okay, one spirit, is that what you said? Great. Wanting to be of the same spirit, same mind, united in spirit.
Okay.
What else? Yes.
100%
give. It's not a 50-50, is it? It's you do it. Do nothing from selfishness or conceit.
Think about that for just a minute. That 50-50 proposition in marriage isn't biblical. It's 110 and 110. Let's get it on the sports illustration here.
What else, if we practice these things, would enable us to minister to our mate? Looking out for someone else's interest and not for your own. And that's mainly what we're going to talk about this morning. One of the main barriers in marriage is just pure selfishness. Looking out for number one, just wanting my needs to be met. The most important thing to me is me and my needs. But if we do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each of you regard one another as more important than himself.
Now, here is a good illustration of someone who needs to learn to serve. Any relationship or illustration of any mother here in might be coincidental. Children screaming, mine, mine, mine. Zenith, come back here with that. No, 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 no. You're just tired, honey. Gus is tired. Mommy's tired, too. And Dad walks in. Wah, what a day. No one speak to me. Daddy, daddy, daddy. Wah. Quality family time has begun. Welcome home, Dad. Hopefully you came home with an attitude of ministering to someone else when you got there.
But it's really hard for us to consider one another. Because essentially, and I think Larry Crabb is the one that we heard this from first, when we stand at the altar, essentially, you know, we're saying these wonderful vows that sound real good, but essentially what we're saying to one another is that I'm giving myself to you for the rest of my life, for you to meet all of my needs. And so it's very important that we understand that that's not the mindset that's going to enable us, in a sense, to hit a home run in our marriage. Because if we're all looking out for our own needs and protecting ourselves and manipulating the other person to meet our needs, then we start getting into a lot of trouble. In fact, a long time ago, I was meeting with a young woman having some coffee, and our plan was for Jack to pick me up at this coffee shop, and we were going on to the church to see one of the Francis Schaeffer films. Well, we were talking, and I kept looking at my watch, and Jack wasn't there, and so I gave him 10 more minutes, and finally 15, and finally 20 minutes, and so then I got up, and I called the house, and the kid said, "Oh, Mom, Dad left over, 45 minutes ago." Well, then it dawned on me that he wasn't going to pick me up. So I asked this friend to take me to the church. And so by the time I got there, the film was already going. So I looked around and I found Jack and I slipped in the pew by him. And he was just delighted to see me. He just patted me on the shoulder and put his arm around me and was so glad I was there. And so afterwards, we got in the car. And as nicely as I could, I said, "Jack, you forgot to pick me up."
And in some countries like this, when you're indicted with stories like this, you wear a sack over your head. I went like this, and that's why I don't have much hair.
And immediately he said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Will you forgive me?" Well, we're going to talk tonight of what happened. We're going to talk about communication, the signals tonight. But the point of this is that it happens in more subtle ways sometimes. But Jack, I realized, could not really ever meet all of my needs. I mean, he forgot me. I mean, sometimes you forget an anniversary or a birthday, but to forget the person, I thought, but see, Jack has one focus. He was going to the movie. That's what he was doing. And so for us to come to the reality of life that the other person cannot fully meet our needs is wonderfully freeing. In fact, and we're going to talk about this probably in the morning, the only one who can fully meet our needs is who? Jesus Christ. And so to look to him to have my needs met, to have my needs fully met, enables me then to freely be able to minister to Jack without manipulation. In fact, the main thing, the basis of a scriptural marriage is a commitment to minister to one another's felt needs. But because my needs are fully met in Jesus Christ. And so real love is essentially defined in terms of preoccupation with the other's needs, not our own.
The thing is that Cynthia needed to feel loved, and I didn't do that for her. I forgot her, didn't I? And so that's what she's talking about there. And so what would be an opposite of ministry? It'd be manipulation. And let me give you Webster's definition of manipulation. The act of operating upon skillfully, sounds like a surgical thing, doesn't it? For the purpose of giving a false appearance, to influence or manage shrewdly or deviously, to press into service, to use. That's manipulation. Boy, that's ugly, isn't it? But Larry Crabb says that at any given time, we're either ministering to or ministering to. Manipulating our mate, either manipulating or ministering to our mate. And one of the fun things that we learn about that is that, this is a, I have to live with a bunch of these stories for a long time, but this is another one on me, that being this suave communicator that I was, Cynthia said or did something and I wasn't getting my way. And so we were on this way to this Christian meeting, of course. And we got there, and we hadn't resolved all of our communication on that issue. And, of course, I was bent on having my way on this thing. And we got to the meeting, and I was purposely kind of avoiding much contact with her. And it was very cool, come right in, honey, and things like this. And, of course, when you're there at the meeting, oh, yes, everything's fine. Everybody's got these big smiles on. There's no problem. I have her head right here between my teeth. She's under control. I think that was probably the way I felt that night at the meeting. And we were standing in this large group of people and talking and having a good time. And Cynthia reached over and took my hand. Well, can you imagine what I did? Like this. She took my hand and it was just like this. I didn't hold her hand back or anything like this. And so in her cunning little way, she kind of pokes me and she says like this. And I bent over and she says in my ear, she says, is this ministry or manipulation? And I said, pure manipulation. And we both started laughing. And people said, what are y'all laughing about? And we said, we'll tell you in another year or two. It's just one of those things. But we've learned to use some things like this, as hurtful as it is at times, to realize you're a jerk. That's all. I mean, that in some ways that sounds better than being a sinner, doesn't it? The whole point is that I was doing just exactly that. And what we can learn to laugh about some of these things and get each other back on what's going on. And so you need to have those signals, again, of how do we talk to each other and resolve some of these issues. And so how do we seek to have our needs met? Well, oftentimes we ignore our needs. And so one of the ways we do that is athletics. Play racquetball and basketball, and we just stay at the gym or at the office and things and stay busy so much. And then, of course, one of the things is alcohol. How do you spell relief? I talked to the ball players and I said, what happens when things are not going good at home? You have trouble at the ballpark. And then how do you spell relief? It's usually not with Rolaids, as Roger Staubach encourages. It's with booze, broads, or bongs. And, of course, you got to have an alliteration to have a good message, don't you? And those are not ways to enhance your life, is to involve yourself in booze, broads, and bongs. Most of you know what a bong is. Okay, some of you do. It's how you smoke dope. Anyway, and it's one of the ways of taking it in. And so the whole point is how do you spell relief when things aren't going good at home? And we ignore our mate and ignore the issues at home. We don't want to go home and hear about the troubles with the kids. We don't want to hear her hassles and things, and so we ignore that. And then we find satisfaction in achievement. You remember the pitcher's mound I showed you the other night? I was piling up accolades, and I was president of the JCs, I was president of the Rotary Club, and I was chairman of the Elder Board. And I remember, now this is ridiculous, I remember walking into the house one night about 7 o'clock, and I stopped at the door of the entryway of the den, and I thought, we don't have anything tonight. Surely there must be some place somebody needs me. And I said, and then I got to thinking, you have gone off your rocker that you can't come home and enjoy an evening at home without feeling like you have to be, quote, somebody, something to somebody downtown. That you need, and what I needed to be is come home to be the husband and father that I needed to be at home. That was not a good revelation there.
Several years ago, Jack came to me and he handed me his cleaning ticket. He had taken his clothes to the cleaners and he said, honey, you can pick these clothes up tomorrow afternoon after 4 o'clock. Well, I didn't say anything. I didn't, but this is what I thought. I thought, well, you took them. You go pick them up. And I thought it was really neat that he took them. That was really nice. And I'm not complaining about that. But my attitude was, at that point, our children were all gone, and Jack was very... he's very mature, very independent, and capable of doing things. And I was moving into this realm of doing the Bible studies and doing some seminars. And with that attitude that I sensed, the Lord very clearly tapped me on the shoulder and said, Cynthia, you and I have got to talk. And the result of the talk that the Lord had with me was loving your husband. I wrote that Bible study on loving your husband, and it was God's warning to me that your ministry, first and foremost on this in this earth, is to Jack. It is not to women. And I thank the Lord for that, because he had to get my attention and get my focus in the right place. And I honestly believe that God would not have been able to in any way to begin to in some way bless any ministry I might have if I were not truly making Jack my priority, and to realize that he was my ministry far and above anything else that I could achieve or do for the Lord. God's way for me to minister to him, to the Lord, is to minister to Jack first and foremost. And I am accountable to the Lord to love Jack with all of my heart, and to serve him and to support him and to respect him first and foremost.
You know, the things that she was talking about is that we left veterinary practice and came on staff of the Navigators, and I was involved in a ministry to singles at the bases there, and of course it was great. And I was meeting with guys one-on-one at all hours of the day and night. And we had all these people in and out of our house and things like this, but for 2 years in a row, we did a little survey among all these singles. Most of them were singles, about what they learned out of being around us for that period of time, and what was the most effective in helping them walk with God. You know what? They did not mention all this time that I met with them at even 2:30 in the morning with a carpenter. He had to be at work at 5:30. So we had to meet at 2:30 in the morning to get any time together. And then I just kept on a list of guys from there on who started earlier. And I'd sit there from 2:30 till about 8 o'clock with men in Sambo's, the old Sambo's restaurants and stuff. And so here was that flurry of activity. But in this survey of things that we asked our people what impressed them most about the ministry that we were doing, this is the fact that they could come around, just hang around our house, and watch me and Cynthia, the way we reacted together, and to watch our kids, and to be around and see how we reacted as family. And I told Cynthia, I said, I don't have to get up early anymore in the morning. I said, I don't have to do all this frantic activity that I thought was, quote, ministry. I said, it just is a reminder again that our home and our relationship together is the best ministry you can ever have. Now, we don't exclude other things, of course. You can become totally selfish in that. But to just emphasize what Cynthia was saying is that we need to realize that our relationship together is the best ministry the world needs. Mm-hmm. And you look at what's happening in marriages and families today, and, you know, we need some role models. And we don't have to be perfect. And certainly we've told you enough stories by now, you know, we're not perfect. But on the other hand, we're working toward that. And we know who gives us the direction to do that.
Well, and Paul says that the marriage relationship is a mystery, but it's also to demonstrate Christ's relationship to the church. It is a tremendous testimony to the world of what it is, Christ in the church, if our marriage is what it is on track, in a sense. So it's very important for us to protect and to want our marriage to be the very, very best to the glory of God. So we can ignore our needs, we can find satisfaction in achievement, or we can attempt to have our needs met in one another. This is commonly known as codependency. And when a mate tries to get all of the love and all of the support and acceptance from another person, then you're in an unhealthy relationship. You feel the other person feels pulled upon. If the other person doesn't come through for you, if the other person is not always there, always attentive. I remember one time Jack came home from work, and I was in the kitchen, and I mean, it was just like that cartoon. With I had four kids, three cats, a big dog. I was cooking dinner, and it had been one of those days. And Jack came in the kitchen. He says, "Hi, hon, how are you doing?" And I was so glad he was home, and I turned around to tell him exactly how I was doing. And he was already back in the bedroom. And I thought, he really didn't mean that. He really does. I mean, men can understand that. I mean, it was a nice greeting. I was really excited he was home and I could kind of unload and tell him how I felt. Well, again, if I depend on Jack to have my needs met, if I'm, you know, then I'm going to get mad. I'm going to get disappointed. I'm going to get frustrated. I'm going to get cool to him. And so I cannot depend on Jack to have my needs met. Cannot always trying to be manipulate him to meet my needs. And I cannot always live in frustration because he can't meet my needs. And to live with the reality that no other human being can meet my needs, friends can't, parents can't, mates can't, is wonderfully, wonderfully freeing. And to realize that only God and God alone can fully and completely meet my needs. And it's as I go to God to have my needs met, then I'm equipped to minister to Jack. And then what happens when I minister to Jack? He ministers back to me. And in a sense, I do receive the love and the support that I desire from him. But it's only through ministry that I can do that.
And see, what's exciting about that is you do it because you want to, not because you have to. None of us like to do what we have to do in ministry. Well, in our marriage, you know, well, I'm supposed to do this. You know, the old lady wants me to do this. Well, you know, that's Cynthia hates for me to use that term, but guys, you know, we use that term and it's terrible. But
I am an old lady today. I turned 55. I'm a senior citizen, so you can say it now.
I tell you what. Hey, listen, that's another discount. I mean, let's get practical about this thing. Now, does she look like a grandmother? But you know, it's the fun thing of realizing that our security is in Christ, and that I don't have to demand Cynthia meet my need. I don't have to demand that money meets my need or a position in something else. And it frees me up to do what I need to do and to be what I need to be. Like we talked about our positions there. So we want to remind ourselves that our need is met in Christ and that we're free to love our mate.
We've got two or three little scenarios we want to run through. And so listen as we do the first part of this to kind of show how we minister to or manipulate one another. These are from our own lives that we've done. This is a telephone conversation. Jack's calling me up.
Hi, sweetheart.
Hi.
Honey, I have some news for you. The company has offered me a job in California.
California? What are you saying?
Yeah, the company wants me to go out to California and be a part of the management team. I'll have an office and a title.
California? That's a long way. We'd have to leave our friends, our family, our church. We can't go to California.
Honey, it's a promotion for me. It won't be long and I'll be making more money. And they promised yearly increases. Sounds like a good deal, doesn't it?
California?
So, what do you hear going on in that conversation?
How is the ministry exhibited in that, our manipulation?
I.
Good picket. Jack is all I. I will get this promotion. I will get this position. Yes. What about my friends, my security? Exactly. Super. No, there's no consideration of the other's viewpoint, is there? Good thought.
And see, how many times, I'm using the job and promotion and money and stuff like this as prestige and possessions and even a little power, you know? I mean, if you move on up there, I mean, you're moving on up, like the song says, you know, you're going to get a house on the east side. And It's things that that we like to promise our wives, and we manipulate that way. So we might start off this conversation this way after we've learned how to minister to one another. And I might say, "Hi, hon. You know, we prayed about my meeting with the boss today, and he offered us an opportunity to be a part of the management team out in California."
California? That's a long way. I didn't expect that.
Well, I told him I needed some time to think about it, and we really need to pray and see if this is where God might be leading us.
This would be quite an upheaval in our lives. We've been here so long. Our families, our friends, our church, the children love it here. And it's expensive out there. Do you think God might really want us in California?
Well, I don't know. All that you mentioned, we really need to pray about. I should be making more money out there, but it will be a change for us in every way. We really need to trust God for where He wants us to be.
What did you see differently in that conversation? God was in control. There was a consideration. One of the neat things about that conversation, I felt, is that Jack acknowledged my feelings. I did express, you know, I'd hate to leave. And he said, I know that would be hard to do. And that really ministers to me when Jack acknowledges my feelings. And we'll talk more about that tonight.
You know, this is almost a scenario out of our life in terms of some decisions we've made. And if you want to know where the businessman's verses are in the Bible, look at James 4, 13 through 17. You might just do that on your own sometime and say, I know that because we've talked to some of you and you've got some job situations coming up for yourself or your kids, this is a great way to begin to consider this.
This is another phone conversation.
Hi, Sin. How was your afternoon?
Fine, hon. How was yours?
It was good. How are things going for dinner?
Oh, okay. You might say things are cooking.
Well, good. I'm bringing home Joe for dinner. He has some real hurts, and he needs to be with a friend.
Oh, Jack, I'd kind of planned on a quiet evening together. We haven't had any time together in a long time.
Well, how about tomorrow night?
Honey, you know we have Bible study tomorrow night.
Well, let's spend Saturday together. That'd be great.
Sweetheart, you don't remember anything. We have company coming all weekend.
Oh, well, I feel I really need to talk with Joe. He has some real needs, and I feel like I can help him.
Oh, okay. Go ahead and bring him home. See you later.
No manipulation on that.
What do you see in that conversation? Yes.
The first thing you forgot is each other. You need to put each other first. Minister to each other before you can minister to anybody else.
Excellent. We are each other's priority. That's right. What else? Where was Jack getting his strokes? Being needed, yes. This guy really needs me. I've got to be there for him. In fact, this guy, Cynthia, is more important than you are. Even though you may want to be with me. This guy's more important.
Any other insights?
Yes. I was already cool, a little withdrawn, good insight. And that's manipulation. So what do you think I would be like when Jack brought Joe home? I would be very civil, but there'd be no warmth, and I don't think Joe would be ministered to at all, probably. Yes, I would be a martyr. I'm real good at that. I had a lot of practice.
In fact, I probably would have canceled dinner at home, and me and Joe would have gone out for a hamburger, and then I'd have played racquetball till bedtime. no problem there. So we might do it this way as a better way of doing it. Hi, Sin. I was wondering how your day was going.
Fine. How's yours?
Well, I ran into Joe this afternoon, and I was thinking about asking him over for dinner this evening. But I wanted to check with you and see what you thought.
Well, I really appreciate your calling first. I'd really envisioned us having a rare, quiet evening at home.
Hey, that's fine with me. I can get with Joe another time.
Well, I really appreciate your sensitivity. We really have a busy schedule ahead for the next few nights, and I really was just looking forward to being alone together.
How does that sound, guys?
What kind of reception do you think Jack got when he came up?
Yeah.
Now, tonight, we're going to talk about how this really scenario could have been avoided by pre-planning and setting aside some definite time each week for us to be together, so that if this had been in concrete, Jack probably would have not even thought about inviting Joe home for the night. But things do come up, and see, this is the thing. It's almost like the Good Samaritan. The thing I love about the Good Samaritan was he took care of the man by the side of the road, but he kept his appointment at the other end. Because who nursed this dear man that evening and all night? The innkeeper did. And the Good Samaritan, I don't know who he was meeting on the other side or if he were even going home. He was there. But he did help, but he allowed someone else to help also. He was not the main person, you know, providing help and support. So I think it's real important for us. The Good Samaritan didn't compromise his priorities in helping someone. And I think this is a mentality we need to develop today, because there are so many needs out there. And it's so easy to be drawn to meet these needs, because they're good things. And I love what Oswald Chambers says, the good is the enemy of the best. And what we want to hold up to you all, and what we love to talk, the only reason we do these things is because we need to hear what we're saying, is that we want the very best. I mean, why go through life with a mediocre marriage? Why not go for the very best marriage that you can have? And so to be reminded that as I consider Jack, before I make decisions or commitments to minister, it's very important that I do that. Then it makes our marriage better, but it also keeps my life in balance.
One of the things, if you haven't read it or haven't got read it in a while, pick up the little book, The Tyranny of the Urgent, down here. It's a little booklet like this, and I tell you what, you read it a couple of times and it'll change your life. Because one of the things that we had to learn in life and ministry with each other is that there are a lot of urgent things. And particularly when you get into a, quote, full-time ministry like I'm in right now, it just seems like everybody calls and, oh, I've got to see you, got to see you. Well, you know, I've got this. Oh, but Doc, I got to see you right now. And you know what? The problem that they want to talk to me about didn't start 5 minutes ago or an hour ago or something like this. It's been going on for 5 years. And me meeting with Cynthia and taking care of my priorities is more important. Now, I don't need, as I say, I need to balance being selfish on this thing, but on the other hand, I don't need to let the urgent crowd out the important in my life. And that would include even my time with the Lord. It's amazing what gets solved in that amount of time when you really keep the important things important. And you don't just cut somebody off. You give them a time to meet with them and assure them that you care, that you're concerned, but then you keep your priorities. Because what are you going to do when you get together with this person like Joe, who has a great need, obviously, and that you were moved to help him out? You want him to keep his important things, don't you? And so it's very tough to preach to him when you don't do those things. And so that's what we're talking about, is not only living your own life as a couple, but God's going to give you ministry in the lives of a lot of people, your own children, your extended family, and people in your church and neighborhoods and things like this. And it's going to be so good, but it's going to crowd out what's important.
This next little scenario was a very painful time out of our past, and we just want to share this with you because we did go through this. We're at home together. This yeah. isn't on the phone. And Jack, you have to tell him, Jack calls me Sin. He says I'm the only sin in his life.
I wish that were true. But that, Sin, are we going to get any time together before this busy weekend?
Oh, hon, I don't think so. I've got a couple of commitments today. The Sharps want us to have an early dinner tonight, and Jane will be here to spend the night at 7:30. Oh. And then we've got all weekend planned.
Oh. And then I just back off.
What Jack really wanted was some special time together for us physically, because we were having this, I remember Jack saying it was the mother of all weekends. It was during Desert Storm. And we knew, and then I think he was leaving town after that. It was just a real busy time. And we realized that our time together had been crowded out. And so Jack was asking me in the midst of this, are we going to get any time together before all this hits? And there really was no time. Now, let me tell you how I felt, and then Jack's going to tell you how he felt. I felt really pulled. I knew what Jack wanted, but I was already committed. I didn't feel like I could cancel anything, and I felt helpless because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to minister to Jack at that point right then. I felt caught, in a sense, from keeping some previous commitments and with all that was that we had already agreed to do and with the company that was coming in. And so I felt, I guess the best way I could describe is that I just felt helpless and I felt like almost like I was a victim because I could sense Jack just moving away from me totally. We were going to be able to, you know, get together to make it right without there being some sort of a chasm between us.
And you know what was scary about this as we thought about it is I had talked to a couple of businessmen who travel a great deal. And I had been talking to them. And these guys got into some various levels of very deep sin in their life on their trips just because their marriage relationship started off like that before they left on a trip. Mm-hmm. And they left without resolving the mm-hmm. issue. And, you know, when you stop and you see the warning signs, when you see that red light on your dashboard, what do? You stop, don't you? You check engine, you know, check oil. You know, when you hear that squeak, you don't just keep driving. You find out what's going on. Here's some warning lights in your marriage relationship. Well, I felt like Cynthia knew my schedule. She should have planned ahead. She didn't think about me. Me. And see, I hadn't, you know, we love to have a little spontaneity in our lives, in our physical life, as well as just fun time. But sometimes we need to schedule these things and at least keep each other aware of when can we get together and have this time and not let other people crowd us out. It's great to do all those things. But in my mind, when I heard her schedule, I said, there's no time. And it was wrong for me to have that attitude, but it's easy for me to stuff it. And then it comes out like a volcano. I get one of my problems in this sweet, demure demeanor that you see up here is a very hard temper. I'm Irish. I'd love to blame it on the Irish. You know, it's called sin, though. the sin of the shamrock or something, but...
Tell him your middle name.
Well, my middle name is Mahoney. So that's almost like being named Sue. I used to fight with kids because they'd find out my middle name and give me a hard time about it. And it got me in a lot of trouble. Anyway, so you realize where you are and you realize where you're not going to let yourself go. And so that's the important thing. So, you know, I could have taken this as an opportunity to minister to Cynthia as well. You know, I could have moved away from my own feelings to said, how can I help you with what's going on and all these people coming in and things? How can we manage this time together? So that would have been one of the things I could have done.
Why don't you give the illustration of the Marine moving toward the front?
One of the things that years ago, I was fascinated by what was going on in warfare and stuff, going through a four-year military college and all, and I was asking this old Marine about how they handled being under fire. He had been in a lot of combat. And he said, as a platoon leader, he said he was a lieutenant at that time, and he said almost every lieutenant that was a platoon leader that he was around for 6 months died. Because he's the first man in the platoon as they're walking single file down through these mountains in Korea. And so they shoot the commander. First thing they do. And I said, well, what do you do when you're fired on? And he says, that's one of the things that they teach us in the Marines. And I thought, boy, this has got it. I didn't think of it then, but here's a marriage illustration. What are you going to do when you're shot at and hopefully not hit? but he said, the first thing you do is get down. You take cover. Cynthia took a shot at me, I felt like, right here, by not planning for me and not thinking about me and all like this. I felt like I was, that she was the enemy, you know, this sweet thing over here. But I felt like I was totally ignored. I was at war with her at that time for a moment. But just like that platoon leader, I needed to get down and take a survey of what was going on in this circumstance and say, all right, where's the shots being fired from? And what his description was is that, okay, we're marching out like this, and I get fired on. You get down, take cover. I said, boy, can't you get out of those things? He says, that's exactly what they want you to do, is retreat, because they've got a line of fire set up behind you to where you're absolutely dead. He said, now, they may sit there and pick you off one at a time, but they've got a fire zone called a crossfire behind you that is absolute deadly. Well, see, just like my friends I just described a while ago, they retreated from their wives. When they went on their trip, immorality just jumped on them. And these guys came back totally destroyed, knew that they were guilty before God and before their families, and saying, what I do? You don't want to go into a situation like that. So I said, how do you handle that? And he said, you get down, look around, and find out where the fire is coming from. And he said, usually up on the hills, there's about three spots that they'll set up fire zones. And he said, you take a notice of these things, and then you go get one of them. You don't try to take on all three of them. You go get one of them at a time. And see, that's one of the things that we do with an issue in our marriage, is that we want to take on one issue at a time and resolve that, and then we can get to these other things. And so figure out which one is one that we can deal with first, and then how do we deal with it. See, I could have helped Cynthia dealt with the activity of the weekend, and then we could have gotten to the other issues on the thing. I couldn't, it was not emotionally where I could talk to her about how we were doing emotionally on this thing, and that I felt neglected and all like this, but I could have helped at least with the activity. And so sometimes you feel like your mate is your enemy. Anybody? I know I won't ask you for a hand, Sean. but you feel that way. But you need to stop and say, all right, where am I getting shot at from? And take care of that one thing at a time, and then you'll get out of it. And he said, I was never hit in the line of fire. And he said, I only lost two guys out of the 8 months I was under heavy fire on the front lines there in Korea. Mm-hmm. And he said, because what we did what the rule book said. He said, we just follow the rules. He said, Army regulations are great. That's what the Bible is, the rule book on how to live the Christian life, because you're going to get shot at from the enemy, and it's not the sweet thing on your side. So,
one way to tell whether or not someone is your mate is manipulating you or not, is if there's a wall of coolness there. Because what Jack and I said to one another, there was nothing wrong with that. He was asking, are we going to get any time together? And I said, honey, there's no way that we are. But, you know, what we said, we didn't hurt each other. We weren't angry. We weren't saying hard things to each other. But it was a situation where I felt like he was manipulating me for sure, because I could sense his coolness and his withdrawal. So, like, when, say, a husband calls home and says, honey, I have a meeting tonight. I know we were supposed to be together, but this meeting came up. I need to go to that, and I just wanted to let you know. Is that okay? And if she says, sure, that's fine. And if there's no coolness when you get home, you know that she's not making you pay for that or manipulating you in some way. Do y'all understand? You need to be honest and open in your communication, but you know there's manipulation involved if you sense a little coolness or withdrawal. So then that's when you sense manipulation. Now this is what we need. This is the hardest part, and this is what Jack and I have had to learn, really train ourselves. And our whole session this morning is choosing to minister. And it's like when we were playing ball this morning. I really didn't want to get up and play ball this morning. But every day you're married, you get up and you play ball, whether you want to or not. It's choosing to do the right thing to please God. So when you sense a coolness, a withdrawal, and we'll talk more about this tonight, in terms of the physical relationship. You have got to move toward the fire. You have got to break through that so that there's ministry instead of manipulation. So now we'll do it the way we should have done it the first time.
Yeah. I'm frustrated that we have let the time get away from us. I wanted some special time with you.
I know you're frustrated, and I am too. Here again, I'm acknowledging Jack's feelings. It's very important in the marriage relationship to acknowledge one another's feelings. I know you're all you have to do is just agree with how they're feeling. Whether you agree with them or not, we'll talk about that tonight too. But you have to agree with the way they're feeling, because they are feeling that way. I know you're frustrated, and I am too. I appreciate that you want to be with me, and I appreciate your telling me how you feel. This was good for Jack, because a lot of times I'd have to try to figure out what was wrong with Jack.
See, I was supposed to have married a mind reader. Nobody else married a mind reader?
Years before, I never would have known what he was upset about. So it was neat. So I encouraged him by saying, I really appreciate your telling me how you feel. Well, things should calm down Sunday afternoon. How about reserving Sunday evening for just us?
Sounds great. Thanks for thinking for a specific time. I guess the thing we can learn from this is that we need to be more specific in planning our time together. How about a hug now before the mother of all weekends? And that was just about it, too. So
anyway, I had to move toward the fire, in a sense, with Jack, acknowledge how he was feeling, and then try to think of a creative way. Even if I hadn't come up with anything, I could have said, well, honey, what do you think we can do to resolve this? And just the very thing of talking about it disarms the heat of the moment and the emotions. And so we have just learned over and over again that whenever we sense one of us withdrawing, we move toward the fire, in a sense. We break through that manipulation and try to minister to one another. And it's just made all the difference in our relationship.
And see, you don't have to know, you don't have to really deal with all this, like Cynthia said. But the key thing, guys, when your wife is like this, you can say, I don't understand why you think or feel that way, but I want to. You make a commitment to understand your mate. That's living considerately with her. Will you talk to me? Boy, that's dangerous. You know, I have to confess sometimes, I really want to know how you're talking, why you feel that way. But I'd like to go on and not ever have a meeting about it. Mm-hmm. Because, see, again, I can avoid the real issue because I might be a part of the problem. But those are the things that I need to do. I need to go toward the fire. So let me show you some things here about choosing to minister. It is your job to meet your spouse's needs. Remember we said felt needs. But God is responsible to meet your needs. And see, Cynthia may not ever meet my felt needs or my real needs, depending on what I want her to meet. God is responsible for all of that. You've seen people who've had to live with a spouse that way for a while until things changed for a good bit. And so the highest purpose of a husband or wife is to be an instrument for promoting our partner's spiritual and personal welfare. You know, you thought this was a togetherness deal when you got married. But see, God says you may be the only one giving and serving at that time. It's 110%. And many of you know what that means a lot better than we do. It's reassuring to know that, one, God can meet our needs through that time. We had a good friend whose wife died of Lou Gehrig's disease. For 3 years, basically, she could barely talk. She could barely do anything. And almost for the last year, he would pick her up out of the bed, carry her in, and set her at the breakfast table, because that was their special time before he began a busy day as a coach. And he would set her in that chair just so they could have breakfast together, because he knew that even though she could not talk, that was still a special time. The last thing to leave you in Lou Gehrig's disease is your mind. All your other functions may leave you, but the mind. And he knew just by looking in her eyes that that made a lot of difference to her. Mm-hmm. And that was tough. He was a busy guy, coaching, recruiting, and all this kind of stuff, and still doing that.
Well, hopefully, we wanted to keep this short this morning, particularly, so we'd like for you to just take some time before the coffee break.